Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Monday, April the 29th, 2024. Again, we thank you for listening. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Hi there, Tim.
And Fred, we got, I guess, leading the news is the weather, right?
It is. Tornadoes. Dozens of tornadoes. That central part of the country, and it is
the heartland,
the time of the year, Oklahoma up into Missouri, this one, Nebraska over the weekend. One of the hardest hit towns was in Sulphur, Oklahoma, a town about 5,000 just south of Oklahoma City. I was just watching a video this morning of the damage there. Like I say, small town, 5,000 people, but I tell you what, it just looks like there was a bomb went off in the middle of town, and everything just blew apart. That's how bad it was. Steve Jordahl found a clip of a woman who actually survived the tornado. I want to play this for you right now. Cut one.
Yeah, I didn't go to a shelter. My grandson did. I heard the tornado roaring coming through, and we got the alert over the thing, but it was too late to go anywhere. The roar, the sound, and then I heard a crash, glass splintering and that type thing, and kind of a shudder. It scared me for a second, and then I thought, okay, I'm okay. My three dogs are with me. They're okay. I didn't realize what had happened. I stepped out when it was all over. I stepped out into my living room and looked, and I thought, oh, the ceilings fell in. But there's that big pecan tree missed me by maybe 6 foot. If it had been if the tree had fallen 6 foot closer or whatever, that tree would have got me. I'm here for a reason. God loves me.
Yeah, that's an experience we often hear, people who survive. In Holdenville, which is just north Oklahoma City, two people were killed there. Another person was killed along Interstate 35 near the southern Oklahoma city of Marietta. And I think it was a baby who died in Iowa in there. So it was Nebraska, as I say, several states involved. We understand the bad weather is going to continue along the Gulf Coast today. Thousands of people still without power in the affected area. And we understand that 8 Days of Hope, a ministry that well familiar with our listeners, will be involved very shortly in getting in to help with the cleanup.
Okay, the tornado, I guess one of the first tornadoes to make national news over the weekend was the one near Omaha, Omaha, Nebraska. And it was an EF3 tornado. And EF3, you guys realize, you got EF3, EF4, EF5. Well, I guess 1 through 5 is the designated categories in terms of strength of wind speed of these tornadoes. But they must have been strong, because, I mean, the damage that was done, especially in Sulphur,
yes,
Oklahoma, and this one in hit in suburbia Omaha, was an EF3, which is, think about this, winds from 135 to 165.
Powerful.
Just that kind of a wind surge hitting that would knock almost any building down.
Yeah.
You know, but the strongest.
Yeah. I monitor flights on a little piece of software called FlightAware, and I knew that stretch of bad weather had to be bad, because I was tracking an American Airlines flight that came out of Memphis and was going to Dallas. And normally, if you've flown on that flight, it's pretty well a straight shot across, right, and down. That flight went all the way down to Houston, Texas, and back up around it to get into Dallas. When a Boeing 737 that was a plane that size pays that much respect to weather, you know that weather is really bad.
Well, ABC News is reporting, saying that there were 83 reports of tornadoes across those five states. 83.
You know, the and the, what happens is, for those who don't know, and I'm an amateur meteorologist, which means not one at all, but the that cold air from Canada and the northern part of the country collides this part of this, particularly this part of the year,
right,
with the warm weather from the Gulf, and they meet right there in the middle of the country.
Right.
And so that's the reason why it's known as Tornado Alley.
Yes.
And basically it's in the springtime, April, May, sometimes in the fall, but the peak season is now.
Yes. Right. You get that juicy air coming out of the Gulf.
Right.
And that juicy air supplies the energy to create these tornadoes. And, you know, we experience it here in our home state of Mississippi.
Right.
It's the time of the year when the alarms go off.
Right.
And
So there were a few lives lost.
Four altogether, yeah.
In Oklahoma? Three in the sulfur?
Three in Oklahoma and one in Iowa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of course, we can be thankful that we have warning systems now in place that, you know, that allow people to take cover. And otherwise, there'd have been a lot more death and destruction.
Yeah.
Our local news is very good. I mean, if you can keep power and keep internet connection, our local news, the folks there will show on screen where it looks like there's wind rotation, and they are very careful to say, get to your safe space now, your safe place. And like you said, Tim, you know, I don't even know, 25, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, you listen for the siren. Mm-hmm. You know, and that meant there was one on the ground. Now we have so much more that helps people.
You know, you can still to this day drive down the roads, many in country roads, and you can see storm cellars from yesteryear, from 50, 60, 70 years ago. Storm cellars built into the sides of hills and so forth. And some people even have bought, you know, tornado shelters to put in their homes,
access to a garage or something.
I've seen above ground and below ground. In fact, in some places in Oklahoma, maybe Kansas too. No, I don't know Arkansas, but I know in Oklahoma they a lot of the new housing has tornado shelters in the middle.
Yeah, you'll see the house, and when the house is being built, you'll see the cedar block.
Cinder block.
Yes. Either that, or they have a shelter underground.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's the access inside the home.
Inside the home.
For new.
Yeah, because I always this was completely new to me when I met and married a Mississippi girl, living through quote unquote tornado seasons. Growing up in New England, we didn't have that. You'd have nor'easters and you'd have big storms, but I always thought, wait a second, you're telling me I would look at people having these outside the home, these shelters.
Yeah.
And I'd say, so you go outside when a tornado's coming to go into that never made sense to me. Now, people didn't have much choice, but what I'm saying is going out into a potential storm in order to get the safety. But
I think the idea, theoretically, it is to make your way to the shelter before the actual tornado's on the ground. But I understand what you're saying. Now, none of this is funny. These people's lives have been radically changed. I'm talking about the storms that have hit, so don't mean to make light of it. But I used to think as a child in the 60s and early 70s when we would actually go to one of these storm shelters that were, I say shelters, I'm talking about like basement of somebody's home or built into the side of a hill.
Right.
And I used to, you get in there and I think it's more dangerous in here.
Yes.
Look at these spiders.
Yeah. There's snakes.
Who knows what kind of critters are in there that can hurt you far worse than your chances of getting hit by a tornado.
There are communities, storm shelters around where we live here.
Right.
And people from the community know there's going to be bad weather, and they'll go there. Yeah. And there's room for a lot of people.
Anyway, keep as you say, 8 days of hope. The relief organization that we partner with here at American Family Association, American Family Radio, are going to be making their plans and announcements. I know they have their rapid response team on the way to the Omaha area.
Yes.
Right now. So, yeah, and you know, this will go on for another couple weeks, this kind of weather, probably threatening weather. But you're right about diverting planes. So you just, so that you're saying this particular flight you were watching was just dancing around everywhere to try to stay clear of the.
Well, yeah, it was Memphis to Dallas was, and normally it's just a straight shot across there. But it took over 2 hours for this aircraft because you went all the way down to over Houston, Texas.
To get to Dallas.
To get to Dallas and back up again. Like I say, when a plane that size shows that much respect for a weather system, you know it's bad.
Because I'm looking up again.
Those Thunderheads, they can reach 30,000 feet or more, right?
They can, yeah.
So they go ahead, Ed.
I was just looking at a map showing the highest tornado threat, and Dallas was just at the bottom of that red oblong shape. So I can see where they would go come up from the south.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. that's not very comforting if you're on that flight. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be, what would normally be a 1 hour flight is going to be 4 hours now.
That's right.
We're going to circle down around Mexico and come up back over Waco and into Dallas from Memphis. Okay, then. All right, next story, Fred.
Well, it's the ongoing story, these anti-Israel protests by students at universities now, a lot of universities right across the country. Just moments ago, Columbia University in New York, where all of this started back, 10 days ago, the Columbia University administration has just issued an ultimatum. You break up your little tent city by 2:00 Eastern this afternoon, or we're going to start expelling you. And we're just a few weeks away from final exams, which means for some people you wouldn't graduate. But I'll tell you what, it was interesting on the weekend. Some of the headlines, these students are saying, we want amnesty. There's over 900 have been arrested across the country. We want amnesty. We don't want any punishment for what we have done. In fact, on the weekend on CNN, Columbia professor Bruce Robbins was interviewed saying, hey, it's all peaceful, you know, all peaceful what's going on out there. Well, Fox interviewed Jewish student Jessica Schwab this morning, who begged to disagree with that professor, Bruce Robbins. Cut number two.
Most of the faculty and I think the student body think that what's gone wrong is calling in the police, that the protest was calm, well organized, not violent. There was little, if any, intimidation of anyone.
I've heard many things that are very anti-Semitic, and also my friends and I, when we simply walked onto the lawn, I think I talk about this story all the time, but when we walked onto a lawn, we've walked onto 1,000 times, we were corralled by a mob of over 200 people trying to push the Zionists off the camp. And then later on, the person who led that chant turned out to be someone who actually wanted to go out and murder Zionists. And that was known to the university in January, yet he was still on campus and still trying to indoctrinate all of the other protesters who clearly followed in his lead. So those things are very threatening. There's plenty of Jewish students, Israeli students, who won't even come onto campus. And so it's not only a peaceful protest. There are certainly people who are peaceful on the lawn, but there's a lot of this growing, like, threatening culture that's taking place on campus and especially off campus.
What do these people want?
What do they want? Well, it all started within 48 hours after October 7th. They believe Israel is in the wrong. They believe Israel is a colonial state. They believe the Palestinians have the right to all the land. That's why many of these students are chanting from the river to the sea. And so the condemnation is all against Israel. They want the universities to divest from any businesses that do business with Israel. I think you could make the statement that these students have been indoctrinated into believing that Israel is evil and the Palestinians, even Hamas. You've had some students shouting, "We are Hamas," the terrorist group. So they have been indoctrinated. At Columbia, back there was a story last week, at least three of the professors there celebrated the massacre of more than 1,200 Israeli citizens on October the 7th, and they still have a job.
Listen, I would be very surprised if Columbia goes through with this deadline.
Yeah, this is the third.
Yes, I'd be very surprised. And what I would be very interested in finding out, I doubt it would be made public because this would be, I think, embarrassing for the university. I would like to know if they actually do follow through with this and people are arrested or, you know, gathered up to be arrested. I would be very interested to know what percentage are actually students at the university and what percentage are outside agitators.
Yes.
Who are paid to come in and try to disrupt and to indoctrinate students.
I guess with any protest, you have to ask yourself, what's your objective? Okay. And what are the means of reaching your goal or objective? In this case, if you just left these people alone to sit in the, and I'm not suggesting you should, I mean, you got to have law and order on your campus, but were they going to camp out for a year or two to
end? Kind of like the Occupy Wall Street.
For what purpose?
They eventually.
They're not going to. I guess if you were to follow this in some sort of a logical way, they would be protesting, these students, against Israel in favor of Hamas for the reasons Fred articulated earlier, their worldview. For their administrations, be it Columbia or NYU or whatever campus it is around the country, to also condemn Israel openly and publicly, and thereby getting the attention of what, the political leaders like Joe Biden, the president, or somebody to also do the same? I mean, what's the end game here?
I would think normally that's what we think protests are meant to do, and you know, as long as you're not preventing other students from going to class, there's room for that kind of protest.
Right.
Okay. But you got to follow the rules in terms of everyone else. But I think one of the factors that has changed this for many people is, like we heard from this Jewish student, the threats of violence against Jewish students. That, to me, delegitimizes the protests and makes it difficult for the university to allow it to go on. If a student who is clearly Jewish, wearing some sort of Jewish, clothing or if they're walking across this common area to go to their class and they get surrounded and corralled, like this young lady said, and threatened, that to me makes it difficult for the university to allow it to go on, because if they beat some kid up, then the university gets sued for not having sufficient security out there to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, but the overarching problem here for these universities is that the administration, and the professors, they're all left wing radicals too.
Yes.
So they're in agreement with From the River to the Sea,
right?
Philosophically.
Yes.
So that's why, if these were pro-life protesters, they would be dragged away and beaten and thrown in jail, and nobody would think a thing about it. The left-wingers would go, yay.
There'd be no pup tents out on the common ground.
That'd be unacceptable. Right. It wouldn't be allowed. But it's because of the cause that the administration and these professors on campus agree with. Now, the interesting thing is a lot of the alumni of these schools are saying, we're not going to continue to give money to these, even though they're liberal too. Most of these people, they may be Jews, or they see this for what it is. It's a Jew-hating and America-hating movement, and they don't want to be a part of it. So they're saying, you know, I'm not going to give any more money to my alma mater as long as they're doing this.
Right.
Representing, allowing this kind of sentiment to be
But this expressed. Is just another manifestation of the Marxist indoctrination
yes.
that has been going on at these places of so-called higher education. Breaking, you know, critical race theory, breaking up groups of people in the world into oppressor and oppressed. And when you listen to these students, Israel is the oppressor. Regardless of what Hamas has done to Israel right. and the terrorist groups have done to Israel and what the Palestinian leadership has threatened Israel for years and years and years, they say Israel had no right to go into Gaza in its current operation to get rid of Hamas.
Right.
There's no blame to Hamas.
Right. Israel just needs to take it.
Yes.
Right. They need to take the slaughter.
Yes.
And
they deserve it.
And they deserve it. Yeah. That's the worldview that these folks have.
Yeah. Scary.
Yeah. But that's why I call it a death match. You know, you got to pick a side, one side or the other. And, yes. And,
but they're also not aware of the history. And, this is going to shock you. We're going to play a clip of Hillary Clinton. But Hillary Clinton, several months ago, assessed what the problem is in that part of the world.
Okay.
I want you to have a listen.
I can take about a minute and a half of Hillary Clinton, and that's about it.
I'll give you a minute and 6 seconds.
Okay, I can take that.
All right, cut number three.
My husband, with the Israeli government at the time in 2000, offered a Palestinian state to the Palestinians, at that time run by Arafat, Yasser Arafat. Right. Arafat turned that down. There would have been a Palestinian state now for 23 years if he had not walked away from it. There was another attempt when I was Secretary of State to try to, you know, bring the Palestinians and the Israelis together. That didn't work out. Israel left Gaza in 2005 and forcibly ejected 50,000 Israelis who were living in Gaza. They left all of their infrastructure. They had a big infrastructure of greenhouses where they were supplying fruits, vegetables, flowers, etc. And, you know, the Palestinians deserved to have a productive, successful economy in Gaza. Hamas came in and basically destroyed all of that and killed a lot of other Palestinians.
She tells the truth.
And that's been the history
of,
quote, negotiations with the Palestinian leaders from Yasser Arafat. I don't know who preceded him. And now Hamas, which is even more radical. And for those who wonder, well, why doesn't Hamas negotiate a settlement with Israel? You got to understand Hamas is like the mob, all right? And so the people who live in Hamas being the government or the representative government, I'll use that in quotations, are the representatives of the Palestinian people, Hamas being that, they believe in terrorism to achieve their objectives, and their objectives is to kill all the Jews. Well, if that's going to be the kind of people that represent you, they're never going to be open to an idea of any kind of peaceful settlement, short of all the Jews being dead.
Right. That's what they want. And Israel cannot. There can't be a two-state solution because Israel can't be one of those states.
Right.
And
Hillary Clinton there is saying that the history is that they the Palestinian leaders, have been offered a two-state solution, and they have rejected it. Well, why would you reject it? Because they don't want a two-state solution. They want Israel gone.
Right.
Okay. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on American Family Radio.
I'd like to take a minute and have a heart-to-heart with you. If you're able, place your hand over your heart. Can you feel it? My strong heartbeat reminds me that I'm alive. See, it's the same for an unborn baby. Their heart begins to form at conception and at just 3 weeks is already beating. At 5 weeks, a baby's heartbeat can be heard on ultrasound. That's where preborn steps in, rescuing 200 babies every day from abortion, simply by providing a mother with a free ultrasound and allowing her to hear her child's heartbeat and see their perfectly formed body in the womb. By 6 weeks, eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby is able to suck his or her thumb. Preborn needs our help to save these precious souls. For just $28, you could be the difference between the life or death of a baby. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano and Fred Jackson, and you're listening to AFR. We've been talking about what's happening in Israel, and we've been talking about the protest. We've been talking mostly about the protest in the U.S. on college campuses against Israel and in favor of Hamas and what this means. Now these protesters, they don't like at all President Biden.
Oh, yeah.
Or his administration, right? Because they side in any way whatsoever with Israel.
Right.
That's right.
Which is kind of odd.
Sending aid, whether it's, you know, direct financial funding or military weapons, they look at that as siding with the oppressor.
But wouldn't you say, and this is kind of hard to judge exactly, but wouldn't you say that half the modern Democrat Party today in America are represented by these protesters?
Yes.
I don't know what the percentage is, but it's not small. In other words, they're pro-Hamas. I want to be fair. They're pro-Palestinian.
Right.
You probably have like some of the squad members that are out now pro-Hamas. So I do want to be fair to the Democratic Party, but that's a huge chunk of the Democratic Party being pro-Palestinian.
So they're at war with themselves. I'm talking about the Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
More so than the Republicans are.
Yes.
Because you've got a lot of Jews who are Democrats.
Yes.
Right?
Chuck Schumer.
Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Senate. He's from a New York Jew.
Right.
Right? And here, Debbie Wasserman. She's from South Florida, one of the leaders of the Democrat Party. She's a Jew. Well, here you have Jews who are in the same political party with people who hate Jews.
Yes.
Or at least they're supportive of people who hate Jews. It's really an odd
situation. You'd have Jews in the Democratic Party who are liberal, who hold to their liberal beliefs and could be anti-Zionist or be critical of the Israeli state.
Right.
And that's been the case for decades and decades, and they not see any contradiction in that. However, it is increasingly going to be difficult for them because many of those who are supporting a Palestinian state, quote unquote, okay, are those who are openly in support of Hamas. So you're going to, what Democrat is, you think Chuck Schumer is, or some of these other Jewish members of the Democratic Party are going to take a bold stand and say to a large percentage of their base, Israel has a right to exist and they have a right to defend themselves, even as we're supportive of a two-state solution? It's going to be increasingly difficult for Democratic leaders who are Jewish to make that statement.
I think liberal Jews, I would describe as socialist in their thinking. They believe in big government programs.
Right.
That's just a thinking. It, you know, you actually see it in the establishment of a kibbutz in Israel, that kind of thinking. But now you've got an element in the Democratic Party that is Marxist.
Yes.
And they see the Israeli government as a problem. They see Israel as an interference in what they believe goes back to the critical race theory. We've already discussed that. So that is something. Now, I do believe. Now, we saw in Michigan when the Democrat primary was held there, there was, over 100,000 who didn't vote for Biden.
Right.
But I think on Election Day they will.
Yes.
Because they're not going to vote for Trump, and I don't think they're going to stay home.
Right.
Because they do believe they can move the Democrat Party into their realm of thinking.
I mean, let's be honest here. Both Donald Trump and Joe Biden are up there in years. If you're a younger Democrat that is pro-Palestinian, who hates Israel, you're a Democrat, you say, I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. He's not going to be around much longer.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party belongs to people like me.
Yes.
So they're not going to, like you said, they're not going to stay home and help Donald Trump get elected or reelected. Yeah. But they'll bide their time for Biden to leave the scene.
Yes.
Next story.
All right. Well, on Saturday night was the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner in Washington. And Joe Biden was there, and he read a bunch of jokes. Cut number five.
It's been a year since I delivered this speech, and my wife, Jill, who's with me tonight, was worried how I do. I told her, don't worry. Just like riding a bike. She says, that's what I'm worried about. The 2024 election is in full swing. And yes, age is an issue. I'm a grown man running against a six-year-old. Age is the only thing we have in common. My vice president actually endorses me.
What did he say right there?
My vice president actually endorsed.
Oh, but a boom,
Mike Pence.
I got you. Okay, I see what he's saying there. That was that's an annual event that it's kind of a roast.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they I guess Biden's sort of making fun of himself in a way, and then making fun of Trump too. But it's also for the. Isn't that what they do? Basically, they roast.
They usually have a comedian. I don't know who.
It was some Saturday Night Live guy.
Yes.
And they'll usually poke fun at, they'll poke fun at politicians. And I've seen them poke fun at people who are there at the correspondents' dinner.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Colin Jost is the SNL guy that you mentioned. Now, he actually took his opportunity to make fun.
He was after Dan Aykroyd, right? Colin Jost?
Huh? Yeah, somewhere in there in the post-Dan Aykroyd decades.
Well, he actually took a swipe at Donald Trump, cut number six.
Before I begin tonight, can we just acknowledge how refreshing it is to see a president of the United States at an event that doesn't begin with a bailiff saying, all rise?
Well,
that was funny.
Yes. Those kind of things, they're pretty funny.
Yeah.
And I've
That's
seen
kind of like Johnny Carson stuff.
Yeah.
Right there.
I've watched some. I never watch it live.
Right.
I'll watch clips. I've seen people making fun of, when Barack Obama was in office and George Bush. This is a yearly thing, and it used to be kind of make fun of the other political party, whatever. But everyone was in on the joke. I mean, it was just good natured ribbing of the opponent. And, so
all right. What now?
Yeah.
Bailiff all rise. Yeah. Anyway, Joe Conch is a Fox News contributor. And he says the reality on Saturday night, most of the people in the audience, journalists, are also Democrat activists, cut number seven.
If I'm doing the White House Correspondents' Dinner and I'm on national television, I'm certain I don't have to look down almost the entire time like I'm Karine Jean-Pierre. So he was okay. I feel like, every MC at the White House Correspondents' Dinner are basically the same. They're activist Democrats who will do some benign jokes about Joe Biden, but save the real haymakers for Donald Trump or even this network. Overall, he was okay, but it's exactly what you expect at this point. Put Jimmy Fallon up there, Greg Gutfeld. Let's see some real comedians really hit both sides.
And yeah. Those are guys on Fox.
Yes. Yes. Mentioned.
Yeah.
They don't get invited.
No.
To be the MCs.
All right. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. Maybe we should do a roast of each other sometime, huh?
You think I think we usually do.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think it's Trivia Friday, isn't it?
You're probably right. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. American Family Radio is what you're listening to, Tim, with Ed and Fred. It's Monday, April the 29th. Next story, Fred.
Well, a little bit of a political shocker. Donald Trump getting together with Ron DeSantis for a meeting. First time the two have sat down in a long, long time. And we understand what this is all about is apparently, are you ready for it? Money. There is a belief there's a real estate investor that is bringing the two men together. And it's believed that this meeting will help DeSantis donors forget about all the nastiness that was said by Donald Trump about DeSantis during the primary race and start donating money to the Donald Trump campaign.
And the Donald Trump campaign is in need of money. I think he's down to $6 or $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
Biden, I think, is up around.
Well, isn't it because of lack of emails? Good night.
You've been getting.
Am I the only one?
No, you're not.
Huh?
I get tons. My morning when I first get here to work is spent delete. I mean, I get stuff from people who are running for Congress in Arizona, places I can't even vote.
No, I know, but let me tell you something. I'm getting in my inbox, my email inbox. I get, and I'm not exaggerating. I get 20 emails a day from Donald Trump. I'm not exaggerating.
Just Donald Trump, Trump and
no, just if I go, if I went and showed you my office right now, between the time 8:30 when I last checked my email,
yeah,
there's gonna be ten from Trump, 5 to 10 from Trump himself. Now, these aren't from Donald Trump. These are from other groups that are involved in Republican.
Right.
Okay. But they've got the approval of the Trump campaign to use his name and image. But so I'm going to get, how many did I say? I'm going to say 20 in a 24-hour period from Trump. And then I've got Laura Trump. She's about as aggressive as these. I'm going to get 12 or 15 from her. Don Jr. He'll come in there with 7 or 8 emails. And then other people who are high profile Republicans, you're also going to get a few of those as well. But anyway,
I'm looking. Representative Mark.
Is this your text?
This is not my text. This is my email.
Okay, your email.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, Representative Mark.
Is this in the last couple of hours?
Yeah. Yes. Well, this is in my my other mailbox. I have some restrictions on what's coming in. Elise Stefanik. Yeah. I have your favorite Senator Kennedy from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's emailing too.
Yeah. He's.
What does he say?
And it's hey Zir, Z-I-R. Here's what I think the trans movement pronouns should be: dumb and dumber. I like that. But anyway, so we got on some list or multiple lists, and
also my wife, she's getting text.
At
least message? I'm only getting email. You getting text, Brent?
I don't get text.
That'd be a nightmare.
Yes.
So you got text. Brent stepped to the microphone. Brent Creeley, our producer. So who are you getting text from?
Just
same group of people I mentioned?
That and just anybody. Like Ed mentioned somebody running in Arizona, somebody running in Florida.
Right.
There's a great feature called.
Like Kerry Lake or.
Right.
Yeah, I get some from Kerry Lake.
Kerry Lake.
There's a great feature called Block. You can block them.
I've tried all that.
Really?
Nothing stops them. This is like the Blob.
They're like mutants.
This is like the Blob.
I'll see
it's like
you.
Zombies.
I'll see you after a while and show you.
Okay.
Show
you. I've tried blocking them. I've tried unsubscribing. I've tried all that, and they just come back with more ferocity.
You know why? I've heard this before. I've heard that once you block them, I don't know if this is true or not, once you block them or attempt to block them, they know they've got a fish on
a live person.
They've got a live person who's trying to block them. So that only encourages them more. Whereas if you ignore them, maybe they'll go away. I don't know. Surely after the campaign's over. And listen, I know campaigns. I know Mr. Trump, former President Trump, and they got to have money.
Yes,
I understand that to run a national campaign. It's just that it's just a little bit of overkill here when you're getting 20 a day,
yeah.
20
yeah.
requests a day for donations. You know, and from, well, that's 20 just from him with his name attached to it. That didn't include Laura and Don Jr.
And you know,
Eric hasn't hit me up.
Eric, now you're disappointed, aren't you?
I don't know if he's busy or what's going on.
Let me just say, and man, I understand, but what you're talking about, a live one. Okay, now, one time here in the last 2 or 3 years, some people will criticize me for this, but I gave to Wikipedia. Okay.
Okay.
They say end of the year, they send emails. And I know sometimes they have some liberal leanings, I use it a lot. I'm going to contribute. I think I gave them $20.
Okay.
And I thought that would be the end of it.
I know where you're going with this.
But they kept on and on and on. It was like, hey, we got this guy for $20.
Right.
And they would, and I mean, it was endless. So I just said, I'm not giving to him ever again. You know, I thought I would do the right thing.
Right,
I use this free service.
Right, sure.
And,
yeah.
But man, it just, oof.
Fred, are you saying Trump is behind in money?
$6 million isn't much. Money's been spent on legal fees.
Right.
All of that sort of thing.
But Trump's a billionaire, a multi-billionaire.
Well,
I'd give my own money.
In value, real estate values, and that sort of thing. But he argues he doesn't have that much cash. Who knows for sure?
Well, and eventually he probably will start, I guess, using his own money mm-hmm. for his campaign. But
I mean, he's not a politician, but he's been pretty smart. Every day before he goes into court, the latest trial in New York, before he goes in, he makes a speech. And then when he comes out, he makes another speech. So all of that just is free airtime for him. So he's getting that for free. He goes, I'm not sure if somebody has arranged, but he's held rallies out on the sidewalk with various, like last week he was with a bunch of union guys. And so that gets plastered over the media, at least friendly media to Donald Trump. So he's getting a lot of freebies out of this. It hasn't hurt. There's this CNN SSRS poll that came out, I guess, on the weekend, and it shows him up 6 points over Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like Trump magic. I think a lot of it has to do with he says he's oppressed by a corrupt judicial system. It certainly looks that way, and so people are rallying to his cause.
I just don't know why he would need to meet with Governor DeSantis. Are they talking about him being the VP?
No. I think the speculation is he's trying to tap into the funding that DeSantis had. DeSantis did not have trouble raising money, I don't think. He had, in 2022, DeSantis had raised more than $217 million to run for reelection as governor. And I think that what Trump is doing is trying to patch things up, perhaps, with DeSantis, but trying to talk DeSantis into talking to his donors, his donor base, to try to get them to be giving to the Trump campaign. Biden raised in March $90 million.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been very difficult, I think, for
That'd
Trump.
That'd be a weird meeting between Governor DeSantis and former President Trump. Because, so... I can't imagine Donald Trump begging for anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine Governor DeSantis being happy about meeting with a guy who's called him names for a year and a half. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I don't know what kind of meeting they would have. Also, I'm wondering, why does Donald Trump need to, is Governor DeSantis the gatekeeper of these big donors? I don't think so. They're their own people. Why not go directly to them?
Well, I don't know. All we can know is that they did meet yesterday in Miami. So one insider, this is Bloomberg News, said Trump and DeSantis met on Sunday to discuss the possibility of tapping DeSantis's donor network, according to a person familiar with the matter. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but there may be donors who are loyal to Ron DeSantis who don't like the way he was treated by then-candidate Trump and who would not give unless DeSantis said, hey, look, we got to get behind the
So how would Trump do that? I'm not arguing with you. I agree with what's being reported. I'm just wondering, how does this meeting go?
Well,
Trump, what's up, man? how's it going to Sanctimonious? What's been up?
Yeah. No, I go ahead.
I just think Trump would say, hey, it's coming down. It's either me or Joe Biden. What do you want, right, Governor?
I want access to your money pipeline, Sanctimonious.
I think it's just as basic as that.
Well, it could be that Ron DeSantis, Governor of Florida, does have his own mailing list, so to speak, of supporters nationally, even, who gave to his campaign, who supported his run for presidency, who he's, you know, holding on to in case he wants to run in 2028. And maybe former President Trump wants DeSantis to use that to raise money for Trump. Right.
Well, listen, we've remarked many times on this show when it was up in the air who was going to be the nominee for the Republican Party. And Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee. He's not officially the nominee until the convention. But we've said many times it's not helping former President Trump to insult the candidate and thus those who support the candidate, Ron DeSantis, whose voters you need and whose support you need, Ron DeSantis' support, between the convention and the general election. We've said that many times.
Right.
It may be that part of what President Trump is doing is to try to patch, you know, however he does that, patch things up and to get Ron DeSantis on board, coming out and supporting the Trump campaign so that those who voted for DeSantis will support Trump in November.
Well, and this is an interesting story from Yahoo News. It says in 2022, DeSantis raised more than $217 million for his gubernatorial reelection. So if Trump only has $6.8 million in the bank.
Raised how much?
$217 million.
DeSantis. That was for his reelection.
Just for a governor's race?
Right. Yes.
Wow.
So.
And you're saying that the Trump campaign is down to
$6.8 million.
I wonder if, well, that's interesting. Okay. Yep.
Well, now this says as of April 21, Trump had just $6.8 million in the accounts he's been using to fund his lawyers. Could drive him to tap funds from other sources to cover upcoming bills and bankroll his campaign. So there's other money out there, but the 6.8 is in the accounts he's using to.
You know, this paying, I got mixed feelings about this paying lawyers out of campaign finance money. People give money to a campaign to promote the campaign. They give money to say, I want to pay lawyers' fees for a candidate. I guess they do, or they wouldn't give. But, I mean, that's not very appealing to me as a prospective donor, is to say, hey, give me money for my, so I can pay the lawyers. Now, I guess the other side of the argument would be, yeah, you're paying lawyers because they're persecuting your candidate.
Right.
Yes.
And you got to stand with your candidate, right?
Right.
Yes.
And if it means paying lawyers' fees, that's part of it. I understand that argument too, but I'm just saying that doesn't appeal to me as a lasting message to get more donors to give multiple times to say, hey, help me keep paying my lawyers. Because these lawyers that Trump's having to pay, I can only imagine they're probably getting five times what they would normally get because they know that they've got a situation where what is Trump going to do? Say no. No, I'm not paying that. Oh, really? Well, good luck representing yourself.
Right.
You know what
I'm
saying?
Well, listen, I think this is part of the calculus, the calculation that went into prosecuting Trump. Not only are they hoping to get him off ballots and get him in prison, but and put a gag order, he can't campaign while he's sitting in a courtroom, but also it causes him to use campaign funds to defend himself in court that might otherwise have been used for campaign ads.
And I would argue that these lawyers that are Trump's hiring can charge about whatever they want.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah.
For the reasons I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a very vulnerable position. What's he going to do, say no?
Right.
Because you got to have the top lawyers to be able to fight these cases.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back momentarily with more. I'm going to go check my email, see how many Donald Trump email requests for funding I've got in the last hour. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with me.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.